Yul Ratzon, Nimrefe Begion Libila Fanecha, Adonai Tzuriva Goali. May the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, O God, my rock and my redeemer. Shalom all, welcome. Erev Tov, buenas noches, bienvenidos. This is the Kosher Torah School, and I am, of course, your host, Ariel Bar Tzedok. Find the Kosher Torah School online at koshertorah.com. We are presently learning the teachings, the Kabbalistic teachings of Rabbi Yosef Haim, known as the Ben Ish Hai of Baghdad. We are learning in his book, Dat Utfuna. It is the 19th chapter, and we are in the 9th lesson of this chapter. In our previous class, we were discussing a concept of light and vessel. And we were relating that to what was written or spoken of earlier in the chapter with regards to what we called the domains of the Sefirot, the domains of souls, the domains of the angels and the physical world. And we were correlating all of these, in quote, domains to the concept of light and vessel. Now, before we move on, it is vital that we understand an essential point. I made this point in our previous class. I will make it again in this class. And I pray God in every class that we teach forever. Remember, please, never, ever, 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 take any of this stuff literally. If you do that, you will be completely, oh, allow me to use the words, seduced by the dark side. Why do I say that? You'll get to why I solicit imagination as we proceed. But it's important that we remember, all right? Let's look at this psychologically. Rabbi Chaim Vital is the originator, more or less, of the terminologies and the concepts that Rabbi Yosef Haim and all of the Sephardic Kabbalists since the days of Chaim Vital to the present have used. Where did Rabbi Chaim Vital get all this information? Well, according to the literalists, who we have to dismiss as being superficially insufficient, they will clearly state, like it says in the introduction to every book, Elijah the prophet revealed it to him. Okay, fine. Let's accept that statement and analyze it. How did Elijah the prophet reveal this to Chaim Vital? Well, there are a number of different ways. Let's review them. Number one, Elijah the prophet came down to earth on a flying saucer. And yes, Elvis was in the same flying saucer with him. And they all came down and they had lunch with Rabbi Chaim Vital, and he gave him some golden tablets. Oh, I'm sorry, that was Joseph Smith and the Mormons. All right. I'm confusing stories here. You see, I'm being facetious. Yes? Okay. And Elijah, therefore, somehow or another, gave Rabbi Chaim Vital verbatim material. That is how some people interpret it. That is false. Rabbi Chaim Vital himself clearly states over and over again that he thinks that he heard something like this from his teacher. He doesn't remember how he heard it from his teacher, etc. Rabbi Chaim learned from Isaac Luria, the RE, for a period of just about 2 years, less than 2 years actually. And as we have learned in the Sefer Hizyonot, Rabbi Chaim clearly states that the lessons that he learned over that period is not everything that he picked up. I mean, over the years after the Ari died, Chaim Vital believes that the, in quote, image or spirit of the Ari came to him in dreams and continued to teach and reveal him things. And as the time of his death, you know, passed into greater years, those visions became less and less. Now, where is Elijah in all of this? Well, did Elijah appear to the Ari, but not to Chaim Vital? Did he also appear to Chaim Vital? You know, all of these types of terminologies and things are legend. Please let us never think that any of this is what we say, kepshuta, literal. All right? We don't go around and wonder and question if, like Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars when he speaks to Luke, that Luke a la Isaac Luria and or Chaim Vital are sitting and meditating, and all of a sudden this glowy, twinkly body appears. That's how some people think. And let's, for argument's sake, say that that happened. And the teachings as we have it were given over. Fine! We're still left with the great question, what does it all mean? Now, in order to understand this, we have to go back into teachings which discuss the matter of how Kabbalah, remember what the word Kabbalah means, to receive. So therefore, let's analyze how reception is received. We all know what it's like to tune in on a radio station, a frequency, and if you're not tuned in just right, you get crackle and stuff. Well, you got to tune in your mind. How do you tune in your mind? Now, that is something discussed in numerous Torah literature. Surprisingly, though, none of the Arizal or Chaim Vital school, but of earlier literature. And where? More so than any other place, in the writings of Maimonides. Well, I've written about Maimonides in his understandings and insights into the mystical traditions. And although he is considered the flag waver of rationalism versus mysticism, there is so much misunderstanding of what is rationalism, misunderstanding what is mysticism, misunderstanding what Rambam actually taught. But those in the know, they knew that Rambam knew what he was talking about. What am I getting at? Like Rambam writes in the Laws of the Foundations of Torah with regards to prophecy. And if Elijah the prophet comes to somebody, that's not considered prophecy. We call that divine inspiration or Ruach HaKodesh. And therefore, it is subject to the same types of psychological parameters as is prophecy. So therefore, we learn from one on to the other. Make sense? I certainly hope so. Like the Rambam writes, with regards to prophecy, everything that a prophet received from a higher source, bother getting to what the higher sources are, it is filtered down through the faculty of the human mind. The human mind, like Chaim Vital has taught, like the Ben Ish Chai has taught, we discussed this in our Etz Chaim classes, consists of two major faculties, the intellectual and the imaginative. Maimonides teaches a tremendous amount about this in his Guide to the Perplexed. As profound and important and vital as a book that is, many of its teachings might not be ready for prime time, if you will. But getting back to what we can talk about. The human mind is the vessel that receives the light, just like we've been talking about in our classes. The light goes through what we call the inside of the vessel to the outside of the vessel, eventually into action. We don't need to get into all the details of correlation, but let's just understand the nature of the process and recognize that the inside of the vessel and the outside of the vessel correspond to those two elements which we just referred to as the imagination and the intellect. Both are absolutely vital if you want to, in quote, receive the light. The light can only be received in the vessel. The vessel that receives the light or the insight from above is the faculty of the mind. Inner vessel, imagination. Outer vessel, rational intellect. Oh, let's expand on that and refer to that sephirotically as Chokhmah and Bina, if you will, the two mochin. Now, I'm not saying that the inside and outside of the vessels are Chokhmah and Bina. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just giving you a correlation to help us understand. These two functions of the mind are vital. So, if the Arizal in his day, he was sitting on his island out in the middle of the Nile, meditating. Somehow, in some way, in his imagination, he might have, in quote, seen Elijah the prophet. And therefore had to somehow make sense, rational intellect, of what it was that his imaginative faculty saw. He could then pass on those teachings to Chaim Vital. And that would be called a revelation of Elijah. No, not that Elijah came in the twinkly body of light a la Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars. A question in text here. Was it imagined or was it real? I will respond to you in the wise words of Xuanzi, who was a Taoist philosopher of the school of Laozi, a very famous story that I've told a number of times, about a man who fell asleep and dreamed that he was a butterfly. And that dream was so vivid and so real that when he awoke, he questioned and pondered, was he truly a man who had dreamed that he was a butterfly? Or was he maybe, possibly, a butterfly who was now dreaming that he was a man? What's the point of the story? What is real? What is imagination? You see, we come to the concepts from a point of view which in the psychology doesn't really exist as we might think. Or in other words, the definition or distinction between reality and imagination, and I'm not saying fantasy, are not so distinct from one another. Because what is in the imagination, if it can be taken and, I don't know, let's apply some metaphors, extracted, taken out, polished up, brought into the intellect, well, that's where everything comes from. Where do you think the idea for the light bulb came from? Where do you think the idea for the telephone came from? Where do you think the idea of the Apple computer came from? It came from the imaginations of those inventors who then were able to, with rational intellect, analyze, define, and draw it out to become something real. This same mental faculty, this same cerebral function, is exactly what happens in the process of prophecy or Ruach HaKodesh. It's the same mental function. And when that understanding is lacking, then clarity of understanding of the process and the performance is lacking. Or in other words, it's kind of like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You just don't get it. So, somehow or another, whether it's Isaac Luria or Chaim Vital, let's put ourselves for a moment in their shoes. They're sitting and reading the Zohar. We're not going to get into the argument or debate who wrote the Zohar. You all know that, in my opinion, I think it's definitive, proven, and final. Shimon Bar Yochai didn't write the Zohar. Doesn't make it any less valid. But Chaim Vital and Isaac Luria, they're believers. And when they're reading the Zohar, they are trying to be rational, analyze, and understand it. And at the same time, they are going into their imaginations for insight. This is what I referred to in my Sefer Yetzirah meditation series way back when, as Sechil Tenuda, or oscillating consciousness, where based upon the Mishnah, it says you understand with wisdom and be wise with understanding. You go back from Chokhmah to Bina and Bina to Chokhmah. You go back from rational to the intuitive, which is the imaginative, and back and forth. That's what they did. This is a psychological phenomenon. They would sit and think and sit and think and sit and think and sit and think, and somehow, bingo, that proverbial light bulb popped over their heads. I got a great idea. Because they sat and imagined it. And of course, in their idea, that idea might have come into the mind of Isaac Luria or Chaim Vital or Yosef Chaim in the symbolic mental form of a person who would have been interpreted to have been Eliyahu HaNavi or another Tzaddik or an angel. Remember, Maimonides makes very clear that all these types of experience are completely psychological, happening within the context of the mind. And there is nothing that we learn in the prophetic experience which teaches us anything contradictory. We even learn this from the book of Daniel. You remember the very famous story? Daniel's having a vision. Everybody around him doesn't see anything. But they see he's spooked out and they get spooked out. That's where it all is. Internal, in the mind. Vital, vital that this be understood. So therefore, when Reb Chaim Vital is visualizing worlds and sefirot and vessels, he is not seeing a literal reality. But using the psychological term, he is seeing what we call an archetype. He is seeing some type of a pictorial image in his mind based upon the parameters of his intellect, what his mind has been exposed to, and what his mind is able to comprehend. And he describes things accordingly. And for those who are faithful to the teachings of these masters, they will proclaim them to be from Elijah. Is there any definitive proof? Of course not. Is there any rationale behind it? Not really. It's a belief. More honorable. More legend. But that's just fine. And that's how we have to understand this. With that introduction, let's move on. It states here now, Od Sham Bishara Kavanot Niskar Bidrush Inyan Shinui HaTefilot Ketav Rabbeinu Zala. In the Sha'ar HaKavanot, specifically in the lectures about the differences in prayer, Rabbi Chaim Vital wrote and stated, Gamda, also know, Ki B'kol Tefilotenu Anu Ma'alim Ha'olamot Ha'elyonim Mikashrim otam ze bezeh kinizkar beparashat Bereshit beinyan hechalot vegam ken beparashat Pekudei. He states, note that all of our prayers, we raise up the supernal worlds and unite them and bond them one with the other, as it's referred to in the Zohar, in the matter of the hechalot palaces, in Parashat Pekudei, etc. Aval, tzarich sheteda, ki ein anu yucholim la'alot olamot biya, ad ha'atzilut lichlol otam sham, ela mebichinat ha'nefashot ve'haruchot ve'haneshamot, asher b'shlosha ha'alamot elu. How then are we elevating and raising up these worlds? He states, we have to know that we're only able to raise up the lower worlds called Beriah, Yetzirah, and Asiyah to the level and realm of the divine, the Atzilut, and to join them all together. We can only do that from what is called the inner element or aspect, from the level of the soul level within him, called the nefesh soul, the ruach soul, and the neshama soul. The Elohim ha'olim im ha'shechina lamala, shehu ha'malchut ha'eliona, komu shnemar b'tibel Rosh Hashanah. It is the souls that we raise up with the divine presence, the Shekhinah, to the level of the Malchut HaElyonah, the supernal Malchut, which is the Malchut of Atzilut. He says, as we refer to in the prayers of Rosh Hashanah. Ki ha-neshamot hem yoter pinimiim min ha-melachim. We've stated how the souls are, of course, more internal than the angels. Therefore, the angels, Einam rak olim rak b'Shabbat. Angels only ascend on Shabbat. This is the secret again of the, it says there, the angels stand outside and cry. They cry because they are outside and not inside. Therefore, they are not able to rise up to the Malchut. And let me finish to the end of this little section here, and then I'll comment. Aval b'chinat olamot atzmam, the element and domain of the worlds themselves, einam yechulim la'alot ad biyat Mashiach. The worlds themselves are not able to ascend until the coming of Mashiach. Because only then, when Mashiach comes, will they be able to rise and ascend, in other words, the worlds themselves. However, now, lo yish aliyah, v'hitchalalut ha'olamot lamala, the only way that we're able to ascend and join the worlds together above is what we call from the levels of the souls within them, joining them to the Malchut. As he says that we will describe later on, that there is no ein shum hitzoniut ole, the externals do not ascend, they stay in their place, all right? Now, let's explain. This is a very, very vital and important point. We have what's called the inside worlds, the outside worlds. Do we really need to elaborate what those are? Close your eyes. Sense yourself. You sense yourself inside. That's your inside world. The world of your intellect, the world of your imagination. The outside world, knock on wood, knock on stone, knock on metal. That's the outside world. Our prayers are focused to ascend and raise up the inner worlds. We do not have what it takes by the power of prayer, by the power of mind, to raise the outside world. So in all due respect to Magneto of the X-Men or the Jedi of the Sith and Star Wars, I find your lack of faith disturbing. Doesn't hold beans. All the prayers in the world are not going to bring Mashiach. They're not going to change the world. They're not going to make magic. No, that doesn't mean God doesn't hear prayer. Of course God hears prayers. Of course God answers prayers. But you might have noticed that it's been about, oh gee whiz, 2,000 years that people have been praying for Mashiach to come. And he ain't come yet. Somebody's asking a question here in text. So if I pray for more success or money, it's useless? I'll tell you why. You pray for your success. You pray for your money. And see if your prayers are answered. Or you work hard. Think clearly. Be practical. Be realistic. And see which one works for you more. Somebody in text is again responding here with the words, I believe in perfect faith. You can believe in all the faith that you want. If you just sit on your derriere and you do nothing, guess what you are going to get? Nothing. Right? Why? You know, there's a verse that we recite from Ashrei, Psalms. It says, Poteach et yadecha. Open up your hands and satisfy the world with your goodness. Okay, so I suggest that this is what you do. Forget about working. After all, that's what those insane Haredim do. Sit down, right? Close your eyes and say, God will provide. Open up your hands and wait for the gold and the money to come down from heaven. By the way, don't you dare get up and eat. God will make the food come down from heaven. And of course, you believe the legend that the manna tasted like all foods. So you pray that God's going to bring down from heaven hamburgers and French fries. And of course, that hamburger has to be certified kosher from the certification you accept. It's going to come down ready-made from heaven right in your hands. Pizza, ready-made from heaven right in your hands. Now, if you believe that strong enough, and you imagine it strong enough, like Shuangzi and his butterfly, you might experience it in your mind. But if that's all that you're going to eat, something tells me you might still die of starvation, all the while thinking that your belly is full. Rectification of the outer worlds, kelim, is done physically. Rectification of the inner worlds is done spiritually. So somebody is again questioning, so the actions complete the worlds. But of course, but you're not able to do the actions, malchut, asiya, until you are able to bring down the light, in quote, from the higher worlds. Isn't that what we've been learning? From the domain of the sephirot to the domain of the souls, to the domain of the angels, to the domain of the action, or from the light to the inner vessel, to the outer vessel, etc. The concept is the same. Light, as we say, in quote, descends from above to below. We don't bring down the light. Our imaginative faculties are fractured. Our vessel is broken. That's why you don't have the light. You can't imagine squat. Let's not talk about rational intellect. The way fundamentalism is going today, extremism, people don't think anymore. Sit down and read Maimonides, Guide to the Perplexed, Duties of the Heart, Kuzari. Go back into their sources and read Aristotle, Plato, Socrates. If it was good enough for Maimonides and the great sages of old to read, you darn well can read them too. I dare you. Do you really think you can handle and understand metaphysics by Aristotle? If not, then your intellect is not perfect. Your intellect, your bina, is not clear. Who amongst the rabbis did things like that? How about the Gaon of Vilna, the very famous rabbi, who wrote a book on geometry? How many of you can write a book about geometry? Think about it. Right? We have to have a clear, rational mind. Somebody here is, again, making a reference in text. What about the great sages in the Talmud, who, according to the legend, used the Sefer Yetzirah to create an animal to eat on the Sabbath? Well, let's say that that was literal. Let's say that really actually happened and not a legend. Okay, fine. How do you think they did it? I've taught Sefer Yetzirah. I've taught it for many, many years. And the first exercises that are taught in that series, that course, that book, is refinement of the intellect. Bina, it's taught right there. You're not going to be creating any animals unless your mind is sharp. Unfortunately, today most people don't have sharp minds. The great sages of the Talmud organized the Talmud not to teach us laws, but specifically to be an exercise in education and thinking. Those who learn Talmud properly and correctly learn how to think sharply. Vital in the understanding of what we just learned here, the joining and merging of the worlds. Our prayers are specifically designed and structured to be meditative. And meditative, I mean using the imagination faculty to visualize in our minds, to imagine in our minds that we are joining together holy domains, holy concepts, holy names. This is all happening in what Reb Chaim here, that Ben Ishai quotes, happening in Pinimiut Ha'olamot, at the realms and the domains within us. And as we perform these functions within our minds, imagination, we are creating the internal reality of it. And as that internal reality becomes stronger, clearer, and confirmed, then that, by creating inner harmony, inner balance, inner polarity, it leads us to more corrected, balanced actions and behaviors in this world. Or, like the Baal Shem Tov has taught, you're not going to bring Mashiach to the world until you can first bring Mashiach psychologically, spiritually, if you will, into the mind of the individual. These are the great and the profound teachings that is necessary if we ever really want to properly understand this material and to use it correctly to make our world better. You want to sit and think, well, I'm going to use the Sefer Yetzirah and I'm going to create myself a calf and I'm going to do all kinds of hocus pocus magic. Really? Maybe you need to watch some more Walt Disney cartoons. Maybe you need to watch more Bugs Bunny cartoons, right? Poof, bang, boom. No. If that is where your mind is at, then it's very infantile. It's very immature. And unfortunately, for the most part today, most people are that infantile and that immature. They believe in the superstition. They believe in the magic. They don't see the sophistication that's necessary. Oh, by the way, I'm not the first person to have noticed this lack of intellectual capacity. The Arizal himself, back in the late 1500s, noticed it. Oh, it's been around for a long time, hundreds of years, where in which he said that most people today are only at the level of nefesh. What he meant by that, very clearly, was that the intellectual accomplishment of people is at a very low level. Most people never achieve emotional balance within themselves. That's what we call tikkun of the ruach level. Most people never accomplish intellectual sharpness and correctness. That's what we call tikkun of the neshama level. These are the things that we seek to do, not fantasaically, not by symbol, but by actual. So therefore, the teachings of our Kabbalah, our mysticism here, is all about personal transformation. This is a psychological process which is applicable to all human beings. Whatever form, whoever you are, wherever you are, this means you. And that's why it was taught by the Ari 400 plus years ago, the Baal Shem Tov 200-300 years ago, that in these days, it's considered a mitzvah, good thing to do, important thing to do, to teach Kabbalah publicly. Not to teach a mythology of Kabbalah. Not to teach the simplicity or the superstition and the foolishness of false teachings. But to expose the true psychological, internal, transformational properties. Because when we can elevate ourselves as human beings, we can change the world. That's exactly what he stated here from the Shara Kavanot. That if and when we know that the purpose of our prayers aren't to magically change the worlds out there somewhere on the other side of the rainbow, leave that up to the Wizard of Oz. Our job is to change those worlds inside ourselves. That's why we pray. We are visualizing, imagining, projecting, and creating harmony and balance within ourselves. But remember The inside imagination of the mind of any human being is not limited by the physical cranium. Au contraire, it is part of what Jung came to discover and called the collective unconscious. Your imagination affects me. My imagination affects you. That's the great secret of what we call Yichud and Tikkun. So, in the Lurianic Vital System, there is a system of meditation called Yichudim, where in which all these types of spiritual unifications are visualized. It's the foundation of the Sharabi system, the Rashash. But if you don't understand this basic function of human imagination, then you miss the point. You're looking at it from the outside and therefore just scratching the surface. Whereas if you are understanding it from within, then you are practicing it. Let's move on in our text. Od sham b'shar ha-kavanot b'drushei aravit lil shabbat rush gimel katav rabenu. He quotes again from the Shara Kavanot and the lectures with regards to the prayers of the evening for the Sabbath, lesson 3. And he states, Hine nitpa'er etzleno haktama achad, yakeret ha'erech b'kama mokmot. He says, we're going to explain now a teaching, a very, very valuable teaching. We discussed many other places, which is, v'hu, ki b'kol ha'olamot elyonot, Yesh bichinat atzmut, bichinat kelim. We know within all the worlds, there are what we call the two elements, the two aspects, the essence and the vessel. Hine, bichinat kelim, the vessel, there are two aspects of that. There's the external vessel and the internal vessel. The angels, they are a reference to the external of the vessels, and the souls are the inside of the vessels. Adkan, until, in other words, end quote. Now, we've already discussed this. Again, the way of Chaim Vital, the way of Yosef Chaim in the Ben Ish Chai, by quoting numerous sources from Chaim Vital, is to repeat the same lesson over and over so it helps to sink in. Now, remember, souls and angels in the outer world are referring to other entities, some who can evolve and others who can't. And that's what we referred to in our previous lessons, refer to them. We tap into the consciousness of these other races of beings through not the rational intellect, but through the imaginative. You want to talk to an angel. You want to talk to a higher soul. We taught this in our Magid meditation course. How do you do it? Well, Avraham Abulathia in Sefer HaHeshek, if I'm not mistaken, gave us the system. He says you have to visualize it. You have to imagine as if you're talking to somebody and allow that imagination to take a course and a life of its own. I taught that lesson way back in the early 90s, and I wrote it in my first book, Call Upon My Name. I teach it to this day in every meditative system, because it's not enough that you practice a structured form of meditation. You have to know what results you could possibly expect from performing it. This is where the problem lies. People are afraid to do this and that meditation because they're afraid they're going to blemish the upper worlds. There's that opinion in Kabbalistic literature. But there's a contrary opinion that says, don't worry about it. You're not going to be blemishing anything. It's all in your imagination. And in your imagination, the more pure and refined your imagination is, the more you're able to let it go, to be free, to move, to be fluid. That's why we do the Sefer Yetzirah practices and meditations and mental exercises, the greater your imaginative faculty is. You hear me throughout all of my Kosher Torah teachings making reference to popular genres of literature, of movies and the like, using images of the imagination from other people. Whether we're talking about imagery from Star Wars or from anywhere, anyone else. All of these come from the imagination of a individual. We understand that. But like I said, where does that imagination come from? That imagination comes from the collective unconscious. And when some people tap in, tune in, and they get the message, bingo, correct, then we see that they've tapped into what we call an archetype. And the archetype is a collective message and a meaning for us all. And again, somebody here is asking a question in text. What about Josef de la Riena? Was it in his imagination everything happened? And why was his blemish so hard? Well, go back and listen to the Josef de la Riena classes. They are available on the Kosher Torah School. I believe we have them as one of our free offerings. So go back and listen to it. When you read the story, it reads like an epic. It reads like it's something like make a great movie. But was it all in Josef de la Riena's mind? According to how we would understand things from Maimonides and the Guide to the Perplexed? Yes. And that's exactly why his mind was so blemished. Okay. So therefore, let's move on. Let's move on. He continues and he quotes again from the Sha'ar HaKavanot in the Lessons of Rosh Hashanah, Lesson 2, and he quotes, Neve'er anyan shtei yamim tovim shel Rosh Hashanah ma'aninam. Let's talk about the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah and what it's all about. He says, it's our tradition now to do 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, even in the land of Israel, which is not the same with any other Yom Tov. Just a quick note of Jewish tradition and practice. If you remember, in the good old days before we had a set calendar, a new moon was established by witnesses in front of the Sanhedrin in the court of the temple. And it would then, they would go and proclaim, this is the day of the new moon. And literally, they'd light a fire. And on the horizon, there would be a village that would see the fire and they'd light a fire. And on and on and on until it went all the way across the Middle East to places like Babylon. But by the time the community in Babylon received the message, almost a whole 24 hours had passed. So for them, they're kind of like a day behind. So therefore, when it comes to observing a day of a holiday, well, what day would it be? So the tradition developed, being that there was a question, they should observe the holidays for 2 days. Now that was only a problem outside the land of Israel, from the distance from the land. So to this very day in Jewish tradition, holidays are observed outside the land of Israel for 2 days, and in Israel for 1 day. Now, even though today we have a complete set calendar, we know exactly what days are, but as Tevye the fiddler on the roof would remind us, tradition! We don't change things. Why? Because you don't want to confuse people. People sometimes can't handle change. You'll notice that. Small minds can't handle big things. Yeah, that's really what it boils down to. The only holiday that we observe 2 days for is Rosh Hashanah. Now, from a practical point of view, even though some will disagree, they shouldn't. Many new moons, again, are 2 days because you have like the last day of the month and the first day of the new month, pretty much to balance out the calendar. And in circumstances like that, and to this very day, you'll find a number of the month's new moons are 2 days. Well, the new moon of Tishrei is a 2 day, but you can't necessarily have the first day of Rosh Hashanah, the new year, is the last day of the month, and then the next day of the month. So you can't have Rosh Hashanah on 30 or 31, you know, like Elul, and then one Tishrei. So they make it day one, day two, fine. And even in the land of Israel, the holiday is celebrated as 2 days. The realistic original reason was because it was a new moon, a Rosh Chodesh like this, but now Chaim Vital, Ari, have Kabbalahized the reason and say that the 2 days corresponded to two aspects within Zerampin, which is what we call the internal and the external aspects, corresponding to the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. For those who do the Kabbalistic meditative prayers on Rosh Hashanah, you know that the focus of uniting the worlds on day one is to focus the inside of the worlds. Day two is the outside of the worlds, but the outside of the inside and the inside of the inside. Let's be specific. Oh, it sounds so confusing. Yeah, this stuff gets like that. But it's all in your imagination, so let it run free. And that's exactly what the system does. And it's beautiful. Why? Because just like we Shuang Tzu dreamed about his butterfly, Kabbalists sit and pore over this stuff. They sit and dream about unifying worlds. And that becomes as real to them as Shuang Tzu's butterfly. And that is how you become great, holy, pious people. This is the likes of a Rav Sharabi, Rav Kaduri, because this is where their entire reality was. And that inner reality permeates their minds and becomes their reality. And that's what made them great. Continuing. This is, again, the same exact thing we talked about when we talked about daily prayer. All the prayers that we pray, Bizman HaGalut, in this time of the exile and destruction of the temple, Ein Behem Koach, we have no power. Rak La'alot Bechinat Pnimiut Ta'olamot, we have only the ability to raise up what's called the internal, or the insides of the worlds, alone. Only that. L'chlol Pnimiut Da'asiyah B'Yetzirah, and to unite the inside of one world, the lower world, to the upper world, one with the other with the other, all the way up to Atzilut. V'zeh b'koach nishamotenu. We do this by the power of our souls, which hanimshechot b'bichinat pnimiut, which comes forth from our inner essence, the pnimiut. V'bichinat hitzoniut, the element of the external, these are the worlds themselves. V'amalachim enam yochlim lalot, they don't raise up. This is the secret again. The angels stand outside and cry, etc. and so on. The malachim, they cry. The angels cry because we said that they are outside. They are not from the inner worlds like the souls of men. So we can today raise up within our minds. But unfortunately, we are not Jedi or Sith that we can take that and change the world. That is in hands beyond ourselves. And that's what we have to always understand. We bring Mashiach inside of ourselves, and then God, somehow, some way, will intervene in human history and bring Mashiach externally. That's not in our hands to do. So let this stand as a political comment against the extremists, the Jewish terrorists, the insane people who think that somehow, somewhere, they're going to provoke some circumstance to bring Mashiach. They're as dangerous today as the zealots were in the days of the Second Temple, and completely contrary to the way of Hashem. Moving right along. Again, the Ben Ishai is saying, this is exactly what we've been describing all along. Hasod shelapasuk. This is the secret then of the verse. The angels cry from the outside, like we wrote about in Sha'arei Kedusha. All right? They're standing outside the domain of the souls. We have the domain of the angels. And all this corresponds to what we learned about in the Etz Chaim and the Shar HaKavanot with relationship to what we call the inside of the vessels and the outside of the vessels. But od. We also need to describe here and discuss here something else that we need to understand. This is what our teacher has taught us in the book, again, Etz Chaim, quoting Sha'ar Mem, called The Gate of the Internal, Insides and the Outside. Pinimut and Hitzinuyot, 10th lesson, and this is what he writes. No. Ki b'kol olam abia, all within each and every one of the worlds, yesh bo atzmut the kelim. There is essence and there is vessel. The essence, as we said, is subdivided into the five levels of soul. And we spoke about the souls, that's what the light is, right? Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. the naran, the nefesh, ruach, and neshama levels, those are inside the vessel. But the outer two, or higher two levels, called the chaya and the yichida, those two levels of soul, or consciousness, are called makifim, or auras. They, nikra atzmuta arot, they are the essence of the light. All right, what are we talking about? This is very profound, but it should make sense to us. That which we call nefesh and ruach and neshama are levels of consciousness. These levels of consciousness correspond to our physical understanding, our emotional understanding, and our intellectual understanding. They exist inside the vessel, meaning they take structure and form, which is tangible, we get. But once you get into the other levels called the chay and yichida, corresponding to the levels of chokhmah and bina, those are the realms of what we call the unconscious. The unconscious is not bound by and limited to the conscious mind, here symbolically referred to as the vessel. They are like oars. They're outside of consciousness. They're above consciousness. We refer to it in our language as the unconscious or the subconscious. But they're above the structure and form. That's why they're unconscious. That's why they can't be held in a vessel. Vessel meaning structure and form of thought. That's how you must understand what we call these lights of the makifim. The naran levels, those are the essence in the vessel. Right? And we said that the essence, we said, is divided into makpinimi'i and the makif. There's the inside light and the surrounding light. V'makif gadol me'apinimi. And the surrounding light is greater than the inner light, because we said it's boundless. It's not limited by form. And the vessels also divided in half. We said to the inside vessel and the outside vessel. The outside vessel, we say, is gadol me'apinimi. The outside of the vessel is greater than the inside vessel. Ela shachar kach al yedei devikut or panim bekli hapanimi. But being that the inner light clings to the inside of the vessel, we say that is mizdakech, it becomes more refined than the outside of the vessel. Let's understand this in the concept of thought. You have thought. You have to contemplate it in your mind. That's the inside of the vessel. Then you have to be able to translate that thought into some rational and realistic form and structure of external expression. That's the outside of the vessel. Well, the outside of the vessel, which is the rational practical application, shouldn't that be, or isn't that superior? Well, practically speaking, yes, it is. But being that the inner thought is influenced by and inspired by that inner, in quote, light, that inner vessel or light of the vessel of the mind is what we can call one's passion in one's imagination. It's not enough that we just think about something. We really got to be motivated. So the inside, call it the ideal, where the outside is the idea. Ideal and idea. Ideal inside vessel, idea outside vessel. You have to have the ideal first of what it should be perfectly, and then you think about rationally. Ideal and idea. Somebody's saying here in text, the inner is not constricted as the expressed, so shouldn't the inner be considered greater? We just said that the inner is greater, right? Because it's connected to the light. That's exactly what we just said. It's your ideal. The ideal of how things should be. And the idea becomes how things are. How things are should be greater, but it's not. The ideal is greater. Ideal, idea. You will find this concept discussed in Maimonides. You'll find it discussed in Aristotle. You'll find it discussed in Plato. You'll define it discussed in Jungian psychology. So in spite of the fact that I referenced to you all of these non-Jewish sources, please recognize that this is probably the most Jewish, most Kabbalistic, most Torah, most important teaching of them all. We have to have the inner essence and the outer manifestation. Most important. Okay, we are running short on time. I'm going to try to squeeze in. You know what? No, I'm not. I see here we're going to get into a different topic here. So I'll tell you what. We do have about 5 minutes left of class time, but this is now going to be speaking about the angels and how they are created from the different worlds and the souls, etc. We'll pause because there's 1, 2, 3, 4 different paragraphs with this, and I don't want to begin and then stop in the middle. We can begin this, God be willing, next class, which God be willing will be tomorrow night. Alrighty then. So on this note, let's conclude. If anybody's got any questions and you want to type them in the text real quick, then I will take them. And if not, then we'll just sum up real quick. Remember, whenever we're talking about Kabbalah, we're not talking about those worlds out there somewhere on the other side of the Hubble telescope, right? We're talking about the worlds inside ourselves. Baal Shem Tov taught it, Rambam taught it, Abulafia taught it, I'll teach it to you. This is the only true way of understanding this material and applying it. When the Ari, and Yosef Chaim quoting him, talks about rectifying the inner worlds, and that's what all of our prayers and stuff are about, that's what we're doing. We have the obligation as human beings to strengthen our minds. And of course, we have to strengthen and rectify our hearts. And of course, our behavior. Behavior, proper observance of religion. Rectifying our hearts, proper emotional balance, decent, good righteousness, and then rectifying the mind. I am presently writing about this material in my Ways of Enlightenment written series, which you'll find on Kosher Torah School. Go to our website. It's right there. You'll find access on the front page there and latest essays. And this material, obviously, is so valuable because this is what the whole system really is all about. I'm explaining to you how it works. I'm giving you the mechanics of the operation. So these are the tools. This is how you use them. And with the grace of God, we use things correctly, we'll be able to accomplish great things. So on that note then, let's conclude then for tonight. Thank you again all for joining me. I'm your host, Ariel Bar Tzedok. Come see me online at the Kosher Torah School at koshertorah.com. Thank you again, all of you, for your support, for purchasing through amazon.com, through the links at Kosher Torah, for your financial support, for your respect of honoring our Kosher Torah Honor Study, the fact that we provide these lessons for you free of charge. We, of course, do ask that you express your appreciation by making whatever size donation you can make on our website. Thank you again all for your support. Thank you again all for joining me. See you all in our next class. God bless. Good night. Buenas noches. Shalom.